Welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. Arizona Boomer Radio gives voice to 1.4 million boomers throughout the Grand Canyon State and beyond. Each show has a different guest and a different topic. We hope you enjoy the relaxed, conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now here are the hosts of the show, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Well, hello and welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio. Actually, not with the Boomer the Babe, but with John Mayer. This is Exploring Faith Today.
And that's
John,
right.
And John has a special guest that he's going to be introducing in a minute. Just want to remind everybody that this is Wednesday, September 19th, 2012, and we're broadcasting from our studios in Sun City, Arizona. I'm Pete Peters. John Mayer is on the other end of the line with his guest, and I want to remind also people to go to boomerthebabe.com, see everything that the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is involved in, and we ask you also to sign up for our free online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. It comes to your inbox every 4 to 6 weeks, absolutely free with good information and articles written by many of the guests on many of our shows. So with that, we'll dispense with anything else that we've got to say, and we've got some commercials coming up later. But right now, John, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Pete. Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be on the line.
There you go. Well, we're glad to have you. It's always fun to for you to be the guest babe.
I'm having a little trouble with that on this end over here.
Yeah. I can understand. Well, see, that stems from the fact when Deborah and I are out at networking and social functions together, somebody will say to us, "Well, which one of you is the babe?" And I'll look at Deborah and I say, "Can I be the babe tonight?" And she'll say, "Yeah, go ahead. You can be the babe." So that's kind of where that comes from. So anybody can be a babe. I'm not very often known as a babe, but, you know, what the heck.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's kind of big of Deborah to let that happen that way.
Yeah, it is. She's a magnanimous soul. Why don't we kind of get into our program? After all, that's what we're here for, exploring faith, and you've got a gentleman there that has been on the shows before, so why don't you reintroduce Mr. Fitzgerald, and we'll go from there.
Hey, excellent. Yeah, well, I'm really pleased today to have my good friend Chuck Fitzgerald here. Chuck is the director of faith-based activities, you might say, DES, statewide. He connects the needs of the community and the other organizations that are working to help people who are in any need with the faith-based initiatives that are going up for the same needs. He's one of the best connectors I have ever met. If you meet Chuck, you meet millions of people right away through him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. No pressure, Chuck.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, right. And so, Chuck, it's great to have you back to talk today about these things. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to what's going to unfold. Aren't you?
Yes, I am. Thanks so much for having me back. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, wonderful. So am I. Well, one of the things that we have been looking at from time to time here on Exploring Faith is what we've called the Popeye moments. And I took that phrase from a teaching Bill Hybels did. And, of course, Bill Hybels is the pastor at Willow Creek Church near Chicago, one of the largest churches in America. And he's been going strong for a number of years. And one of the things he says, among the many things he says, is that God will line you up with a Popeye moment. And he reminds his listeners about that cartoon. And Olive Oil would always get in trouble, usually with Brutus. And Popeye would see it, and he would take a can of spinach, and he would eat it, and then his pipe would start spinning. And, his muscles would just start popping all over the place. And he would say, "That's all I can stand. I can't stand no more." And he would go after Brutus or whoever was giving Olive Oil trouble and save the day. He would just save the day. He had a focus. And the focus was always the same, to get Olive Oil out of trouble. And Heibel's point, which I think is right, is we all have some kind of Popeye moment. And there's always a specific trigger, a focus. It might feel kind of general, but there's always something that's, when we see it, we say, that's it. I can't stand that anymore. And we start running after that. It could be any kind of motivation, but that's what it is. So Chuck, we're kind of wondering about your Popeye moments. Yeah. How you start running after people who are in need and what you did. How did that happen? How did you get to where you are now?
Yeah, well, that's very interesting. And to be honest with you, I hadn't thought of this until just a few minutes ago when you kind of gave me a hint at what we would be talking about today. And so that's a very interesting, the imagery is very strong. I do love spinach. Which is good.
That's excellent.
And I put olive oil on my salads. So that's good.
And I, the pipe.
Yeah, I don't do the pipe and I don't have the muscles. But aside from that, I like the analogy a lot.
So. I would have mentioned to have never seen a sailor suit.
And I was in the Marine Corps, you won't see me in a sailor suit. But obviously, I'm joking about all this. But as you mentioned, I work for the state of Arizona, and I oversee what's called the Office of Faith and Community for the state of Arizona. And that is an office that's in the director's office of the Department of Economic Security, so DES, the Human Service Agency in the state. And so, as you mentioned, my role is really to be that connector, to really to connect the caring community to the systems that serve people and to be effective in with those connections. And so that's a little bit of what I do, and some of the details that come up when I talk about the Popeye moment or moments here.
Yeah.
And I wish I could say that there was a one moment that I could just say, man, that was it. And it seems to me that what's happened is I've been given that a little piece at a time.
Right.
And the moments have kind of added to one another. And looking back, I can see that progression very clearly. But when it was happening, I wasn't sure that's what was going on. And so if I could talk about that for a minute.
Please do.
And then you, Boomer and the Babe, whoever's who here, can ask questions or get me back on track kind of thing. So one thing that I remember clearly when I look back is – I decided at one point, and I'm not sure what caused me to do this, I decided to volunteer as a big brother with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Arizona. And it seemed like I was kind of missing my kids. My kids were grown and out of the house, and I thought, boy, you know, there's some teenage boys that are they need male role models. I think I'll give that a try. That sounds pretty cool. And so it wasn't this big moment kind of thing. I just think, yeah, let me give it a try. I feel like I have a little capacity in my life, a little margin in my life. Let me see if I can figure out how to do that. And so I did that, and I was connected with a young man that was in a different world than I had ever been in. And I didn't know that until it happened. And this young man, and I'll call him Jim. This young man, Jim, was in a family where he had five siblings, one of which was in juvenile corrections, was actually in prison or in jail. I'm not sure how you say that. But so there were six of these children, all living with their mother. And of the six children, there were five different fathers.
Yeah.
All right. And I never seen or heard of anything like this before.
Right.
You know, it's like, what have I gotten myself into kind of thing? And we actually took a photograph the very first time I met him with the entire family, except for the young man that was in jail. And I still have that picture, and I still look at it from time to time going, wow. But what happened through that is through the first 2 months of being matched up with Jim, that I helped move that family six times in the first 2 months.
Wow. Yeah.
I moved them into a hotel. And then out of a hotel, into an apartment, out of an apartment, into another apartment, and then into another apartment, all within 2 months. And, You know, I had a truck at the time, you know. You know, so you, whenever you have a truck, you get volunteered for things. But I was volunteering myself for this. And when they moved, there was no one else there to help them. They had no family. They had no friends.
Yeah.
They had already burnt all those bridges. They'd already, you know, kind of used up those relationships. And what I learned through that was what it was like in real poverty. I thought I had seen poverty in my own life, but I grew up poor and didn't know it,
kind of thing.
So I saw poverty firsthand. I saw the stressors that are placed on families that have, for lack of a better way of saying it, have made bad decisions after bad decisions after bad decisions, not knowing they were bad decisions, just trying to survive. But those bad decisions compound. And so I'm thinking, what is this all about? What is, I just don't understand this.
Yeah.
And it was about 2 months later, after the six moves in 2 months, I accepted a position at DES.
Yeah.
Right? I'd never thought I'd ever be there. I'd never thought about that before. Nothing ever. And here I was at DES, and I was there, and I was convicted that there's something that needs to be done for all the families like Jim's.
Yeah.
There are lots of families like Jim's.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stories are the same, you know, stories of substance abuse and domestic violence and, the 8-year-old kid watching the 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and 2-year-old over the whole weekend when mom's gone.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of that. I'd never bumped into that anywhere.
Yeah.
And so my Popeye moment was when I connected with someone at DES and they said, hey, I have a position here. I have an idea that I'm thinking about. Would you be interested? And then it dawned on me, oh, this thing I just went through with this family, with Jim and his family, that was setting me up for this. All right. So I think that's kind of it. If I had to pick one thing that's happened in the last, and that was, you know, 6 years ago, 5.5 years ago, it's happened recently that's really led me on this journey that I'm currently on, it would be that. It'd be Jim and his family and helping them move 6 times.
Mm.
And every time I go to see them, stopping and picking up a bunch of food because I know they don't have any in their house, and just all the things attendant to that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, it's incredible. You know, I remember when you were doing that. I remember that truck, too.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, yeah. I don't think you ever used it, though.
No.
Yeah.
No, I sold that truck.
Yeah.
I know.
You.
I didn't know. So no, I didn't use it.
Yeah.
Right. Actually, that was quite. That was a good truck.
Yeah.
That was nice. Yeah.
So you know, so now I've been at. I've worked for the state for 5.5 years. I was brought in to, you know, and this wasn't the language that was used then. I'm looking backwards, and
sure.
What the language really is. How do we as a state agency, how do we as state government, how do we as programs, how do we as all the good people that work as public servants for the state, how do we be more intentional about connecting with community resources, with community partners, and especially community resources and partners that aren't part of the system?
Yeah.
In other words, you know, how do we partner with people we're not paying to do the work, I guess is a shorter way of saying
right,
that.
Right, right.
Government's very good at managing contracts and making sure the public money is spent right, the outcomes are right, all that sort of thing. And that's great, and there are a lot of wonderful people working on that. But when Valley View Food Bank, for instance, is serving the same families that the state is, in Valley View Food Bank doesn't have the relationship with the system that they need to have, then I need to help. I need to step in and help make sure that connection is as strong as possible.
Right.
You're serving the same families. You should be working in concert around, in this case, the issue of hunger.
Right.
And that applies in every instance, whether we're talking unemployment or refugees or elders trying to keep their independence or people with disabilities or child abuse, whatever the issues are, the human service issues are. There are people that are working on this, trying to do the right thing, that aren't connected the way they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's really what I try to do in my job. And so I find myself looking at a picture of Jim and his family and using that as kind of a little bit of a compass, if you will, to say, remember, this is why we're in this. This family and they were very good at working the system. They knew the system.
Yeah.
This young mother knew the system very well and was very good at surviving in the constraints of the system, but things just weren't clicking right. They were never going to be able to get out without the connections that they needed in the community. So that's the sort of thing that I work on.
Yeah.
I'm happy to tell you some good news with the family.
Yeah,
a little bit of good news with the family is the children are all doing well. They're all in school still. They have their own place. It is a HUD subsidized housing, what's called Section 8 subsidized housing. So what that means is the rent that they pay is proportional to the income that she makes.
Right.
And she's got a job. She's had a job for several years now and is doing much better, making better decisions, is connected, has healthy relationships. It's not me anymore. You know, and I'm not my wife is part of this too, but it's not just Chuck and his wife. It's healthy relationships around the family.
Yeah. Now here's a question I have about this scenario.
Yes.
And how you are really, you wouldn't work in that. One of the conditions that you described with this family was they couldn't get out. Right. They could work the system, but they couldn't get out. Would you say that what motivates you most is connecting people who cannot get out of their situation to the means by which they can?
Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe down deep that's a motivation, but that's not where I work and where I find myself busy all the time. The way I like to talk about it is community, however you might define that. That could be a small group in a church. It could be a service club. It could be anything. I mean, it could be supports through around a child care center, whatever it is. Community is what needs to wrap around these families and what really needs to help these families to build healthy relationships. Not relationships that are dependent upon, the bad decisions to continue, but really healthy relationships. And so my role, my work, I try to spend more at an organizational level helping community organizations, whoever they may be, make sure that they know how to wrap around that family and connect that family where they need to be connected.
Right.
So I try to do it more I work more in the organizational space, but I think the underlying motivation is these families can't do it on their own.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially the ones that are in chronic poverty, that generational chronic poverty.
Right.
Yes, go ahead, Pete. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering. You work for the state, DES for the state, and many of the community groups, I'm assuming, are faith-based groups, churches and so on and so forth. How does that square with the separation of church and state, state getting involved in church and getting involved in state? How does that keep separate? And that's got to be a tricky part of what you do, so I'm just wondering, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I would say just the whole concept itself, for me personally, doesn't seem very tricky. I think that the tricky part is, if you have a needle, like on a car, the oil pressure from zero to whatever it is, the needle has swung all the way over to one side, where the needle probably needs to be more in the middle around talking about these issues. And let me tell you what my thoughts are on that. And that is that the phrase separation of church and state is used in lots of different ways, and everybody kind of decides what that means on their own, without really understanding what that is. And really, if we were to go back to the root of, in the Constitution and in the laws, it's basically the state won't create a religion, right? Or the state won't tell people what they have to believe, kind of thing. It doesn't mean the state and the church can't work together. That's not what it means at all. But that's kind of where the needle has kind of swung all the way over to one side.
Right.
And so in practicality, I work for the state. I may go, and we'll use your example. I may be working with a church. Let's say this church has an employment ministry, all right, and they're trying to help people find jobs, that sort of thing. Well, the Department of Labor in Arizona is the agency I work for, DES. And so we have all sorts of resources, best practices, tools, all that sort of thing available to help people find jobs, whether it's the training issues or whether it's resume help or whatever it may be. There's lots of stuff out there. Well, this church may not know about it. So here we are, two separate organizations, the state or the system, if you will, the unemployment system, the job system, and the church that cares about helping people find a livable wage, both working on the same issue and perhaps working with the exact same family, exact same individual. We should be working together. We should be able to talk to the church and say, if you're going to have an employment ministry, here's how you need to be connected into those other resources that are available. Don't try to do it just by yourself. There are other things in your community you should know about, right? That's not a church and state issue, in my mind. That's a very clear way that we're serving the same people. We should be working together. And so an example of that is when the church in this example has an employment ministry where they're helping people with resumes, maybe it's interview skills, clothing, transportation for jobs, whatever, that job search, all those sort of things, it might be important for that church, and I believe it's important for that church to know that one of the number one obstacles for low-income families for finding and keeping a job is affordable child care. Right? Yeah. And so what's the church doing to look at that? In many cases, it's not the job that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's the, what do I do with the children while I'm working?
Right.
I can't afford to go to work because child care is too expensive. We take the example of Jim and his family, right? Mm-hmm. Single mom with five kids at home, the child care costs are enormous.
Yeah.
And she can't afford to go to work. Either that or she makes bad decisions.
Yeah.
She goes to work and leaves the 8-year-old in charge of the 4-year-old, the 2-year-old, and the 6-month-old. And now there's a chance for that to become a CPS case,
right?
Because the children have been abandoned in that sense. So in this example I'm using, the church and the employment ministry and the system that exists around helping people find jobs, it should just be connected. Not that the system's going to tell the church what to do, or the church is going to take that advice, or would take that advice. It's just they don't know what they don't know. So why not be connected around that issue? So that's kind of how that, when I think of church and state, I think of it more in terms of serving people. What are the roles, the limitation, all that for serving people versus, you know, just the phrase separation of church and state. So the way the system, you know, I call it the system, and I know that's probably not the best terminology to use, but the state, all the providers, all the system can come alongside the church and help. But what we would say to the church is, we're here about service. If you're going to make somebody sit through your regimen as a church in order to get served, that's a little problematic. In other words, you sit through the service and we'll give you a bag of food afterwards. That's not a good practice.
Right.
Right. And so that's where we as the state and the system may say, you may want to think about that a little bit more.
Yeah, you sit through my 90-minute presentation and I'll give you a drawing for a free TV or a new car after the
that sort of thing. And we know as people that just doesn't seem right. There's something about that that's not right,
right?
You know, but believe it or not, there are organizations that's exactly how they think about it.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of the timeshare thing. So through the presentation, I'll give you a round of golf.
Yeah.
You know.
So now, do you find you mentioned childcare in your work and what you're trying to do to connect people and jobs and so on and so forth, and as that's just part of what you, part of what you do, but is the childcare issue one of the largest issues that you face?
Well, I would say that we face as a society, it's a big issue, especially with so many single parent households. You know, it's tough to raise children when you're not at home, kind of thing. And so, you know, yes, it is a big issue. And so, in the example I was giving of the church and with an employment ministry, I'm not suggesting that the church should be able to provide free childcare to all the families that need it, but the church needs to be aware that that's a huge obstacle and be working to understand the resources that are available around childcare in our communities. There's a statewide number that you can call, and I don't know it off the top of my head, if you're looking for childcare, where they will help you find it. And so it's doable, but it's if you're providing that service as a church, or if you're a business and you're wondering why your employees aren't showing up to work,
yeah.
you need to be sensitive to the fact that childcare could be the largest obstacle they have in their life, that childcare piece. And so at least knowing that and making sure that you're connected, whether you're a business or a faith community, whatever, connected to where those resources are and what the issue is very meaningful in your ability to serve and to support those families. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me. I'm just thinking now. All right, so it seems like it's always circling the drain. I mean, you've got a situation here where this family or this single parent has three kids, four kids, whatever the case might be. They need to be able to care for those kids, but they can't afford to get the child care, so they stay home. They stay on assistance because at least that way they have a better handle on what's going on with the kids, and they're being paid by the state to be a child care expert for their own kids. But as an example, is there anything available from the state level, from your department, that says, okay, here is where you can take your children to have free child care or minimal cost child care while you go to work? I mean, is that set up by your organization?
Yeah, well, there's a couple responses to that. One is there is something, this sounds like government talk, it kind of is. There's something called the Child Care Administration.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been in the conversation with state budgets for the last 4 or 5 years, or maybe even longer. The pot of money to provide those subsidies has shrunk, and so on the face, it looks like there are no services for these families, and so that's kind of the feeling that families might have, or that you might get it, you know, through the media, that there's just nothing available for them, and that's not entirely true. There's a network of child care providers and organizations that do know where the resources are. There are resources available. They may not be the optimum ones. They may not be the closest ones to the house, that kind of thing. But there are some that are available. There's something called child care referral, information and referral. Again, I should have been more prepared, so I could have given the website here, but there is, like I said, there is a statewide entry point. You call and say, have this many children, I live in these cross streets, and they'll be able to help connect you to the best resources available to you. So it's not like there are abundant resources just pouring out everywhere, but there are resources available, and families just don't know it. And so what happens is, you know, this bad decision thing. I talked about the young child watching younger children. Well, what happens when mom decides, I'll just leave the kids with the boyfriend?
Right.
Or I'll leave them with Aunt Doris, and, you know, she lives kind of in a rundown place, but she's watched the kids before. And then, you know, you can see how things could snowball out of control. Sometimes that works very well. Kin caregivers are awesome for kids in many, many cases. But in some cases, and sometimes you read about these in the paper or you hear about on the news, it's one of those things where the single parent is making decisions, what is best for my family, and it doesn't always work out that way.
Right.
And of course, the ones you read in the newspaper or you see in the news are the ones that don't work. You don't see the ones that do.
That's right, and that's part of the problem. That you hit the nail right on the head. There are a lot of good things that are happening for families. You know, families are getting the help they need. And in the example we're using here, they do find affordable child care near their home. They are able to stay employed. They do show up to work on time. You know, all those things. But you don't hear about those. Those things don't sell. You hear about the one where the boyfriend causes a problem, right? That's the one you hear about.
Yeah.
We've kind of traveled down a little bit into a wormhole here about this whole idea of a Popeye moment, but I really try to help organizations think about what it is that they're passionate about and connect them in meaningful ways around that passion. For instance, I won't go to a business and say, you should do this.
Right.
I'll ask them, what is it that you care about? What is it that's high on your list? And then I just make sure they're connected where they need to be connected.
Right.
So,
hey, let's take a kind of a closer look at how that community is built, that caring community,
yeah,
and the network is built. And an example that comes to my mind, which I learned of through you, is the Open Table, which is began by one person connecting to one other homeless person,
right,
and saying, you know, we need to do this differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't you unpack that a little bit and see,
okay,
like, especially how the decisions that were made for that work built community and
right,
what the benefits are.
Yeah,
John, just 1 second, guys. We're about halfway through the program. I'm gonna play our little commercial set here, and then we'll be back and let's get into that conversation that you were just describing. We'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
Hey, that's show.
Boomer the Babe are the publishers of Boomer Series books. Our authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network. We encourage you to listen. Ron Jaracki, author of the forthcoming book, The 10 Commandments of Investing, is the host of Wealth DNA, a financial show about real estate investment. Learn how to build and manage your portfolio. Ron hosts the show, and he always has good information to pass along, as do his guests. Listen to Wealth DNA on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Arizona time. Tom Liggering's another Boomer Series author. His book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, is the basis of the show he does with his broadcast partner, Dr. Terry Munther. Listen to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 a.m. Arizona time. Learn how you can maximize your performance in business and in life. The methods you employ can either help or hinder. The choice is yours.
Hey folks, John Bloom here. When I'm not broadcasting for the Cardinals or Suns, I've been spending the last couple of years with my friends building the fastest growing online golf community in the great state of Arizona. Before you book your next round of golf here, go see what golfers just like you are saying about the courses you want to play at golfmix.com. You'll get the most authentic feedback from golfers giving you information you need before you spend the money you've earned. While you're there, write a review of the last course you played and get $10 off your next purchase at Vans Golf Shops, and enter into the Greenskeeper of the Year contest for a chance to win a foursome at the home of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, the stadium course at TPC Scottsdale. Please join us for the next Golf Mixer, Saturday, October 6th at the Raven Golf Club at Verado, and play a hole with PGA Tour winner Aaron Oberholzer and World Long Drive champion Brian Pavlett. You can find details on golf mixers, tournaments, charity events, junior golf, and more on our statewide golf events calendar. Just check out Golf Mix, Arizona's leading golf course review site and mobile app. What are you waiting for?
Get in the mix!
At golfmix.com.
The Boomer and the Babe are proud to be affiliated with Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Valley View is now serving Phoenix from their new 36,000 square foot location at West Peoria and 107th Avenue in Sun City, Arizona. The new location houses the food bank, Feeding Arizona, and the Valley View thrift store. Feeding Arizona delivers food to other food banks and food pantries that are in need. If you're looking for a 501c3 to support, go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. All donations are welcome, be it food, money, or volunteer hours. No donation is too small. Get a hold of Jesse Ramirez, founder and director, and say, I want to help. Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free.
And we're back on Exploring Faith on Arizona Boomer Radio with John Mayer and guest Chuck Fitzgerald, talking about all kinds of interesting topics with regard to community service in the state of Arizona and how Chuck is involved with them as his as part of his work with DES. And let's get back to that conversation. John, you posed a discussion point before we went to commercial, and pick it up, and let's go down that road.
Yes, that's right. We were going to take a look at the Open Table Ministry as an example of how community is built around needs of people in a way that those needs are met and actually the benefits exceed the meeting of needs. And Chuck was in on that from almost the beginning. So, Chuck, why don't you describe some of that stuff?
Okay, yeah, thank you. And for anyone that wants more information on it, the website is theopentable.org. You need the word the in there,
yeah.
So theopentable.org. As you mentioned just before we went to break, this was started by one person. His name is John Katov. He's a member of Paradise Valley United Methodist Church. The church was very good about serving in the community. They had a Saturday morning ministry where they would swoop into Central Phoenix from Paradise Valley. They'd swoop down into Central Phoenix and help feed folks that are homeless and that were part of the Human Service Campus in downtown Phoenix. And they had done this for a while. And then, lo and behold, one day they were doing it, and a gentleman kind of stepped across the line and said, "I want to come worship with you guys." And as a church member, he, and I've heard him talk about this many times, he didn't know how to respond to that,
yeah,
other than, okay. And so out of that built a relationship between this gentleman and John. The guy's name was Ernie. Between Ernie and John, they would, instead of just swooping down to Central Phoenix to feed people, they would do that, but they would also pick up Ernie and take him back to a church in Paradise Valley.
Yeah.
And what they found is that Ernie was stuck in the system, so to speak, or stuck outside the system, maybe. That's a better way to say it.
Right.
He was stuck. He was in poverty. He was homeless. Didn't have much hope. Didn't have the skills needed to get out of it, or didn't think that he had the skills to get out of it himself. And so what John and the members of Paradise Valley United Methodist Church decided to do was, let's put a team of people around Ernie. We have all these resources in our congregation. Let's put a board of directors around Ernie and put it together, a business plan to move him to wholeness, whatever that means for Ernie. And so they did that. They took about 8 months to do that. And the transformation in Ernie's life was phenomenal. Got a job, got a home, got his teeth fixed, got, you know, you name it. All the obstacles that were in the way were, as a team, as a board of directors, were taken out. But the real transformation happened at United,
yeah,
Methodist Church of Paradise,
yeah,
Valley.
Yeah.
The people that had signed up to be on these board of directors, someone was an attorney, someone was in the field of medicine, someone was a school teacher, on and on and on. They had all these talents on a board of directors wrapped around Ernie and his business plan. They were transformed. They now could look back and say, we did this. This is... We helped transform this gentleman's life, and he's changed our life by doing this. And there's one less person kind of on the roll, so to speak, in the system, because community had wrapped around this one person. So this has now I don't know if the word exploded is the right word, but it's blossomed into, there have been many, many success stories like Ernie's. And not just here in Arizona, but I think 7 or 8 states around the nation. And so this Open Table model, the idea of wrapping community around a specific person or family and walking with them to their definition of wholeness, is very effective. And so the message here, the headline here is, It's not transactions that transform people. It's relationships, healthy relationships that transform people. So this kind of ties back to the very beginning where I may have deep-seated motivation because, due to Jim and his family and my experience with them, but my work is really in the area of how do I help community wrap around these families
right.
and be successful in moving families to success.
Right.
And Open Table is a community model, no funding at all from the government in any sense. But at DES, we helped to incubate that with John. So we were able to provide technical assistance to John. Things like how do we handle somebody that's got behavioral health issues? You know, we don't want to put our congregation in danger.
Yeah.
So how do we kind of get through all those things? So we were able to help them figure all that out and have processes in place so that the people they do help, there's a high percentage that will be successful and the congregation is not put in harm's way to do that.
Right. Yeah.
So as a state agency, what we did is we provide technical assistance to a faith-based organization serving the same families we were serving.
Right.
Notice the church and state thing there?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a superb story. That's just wonderful. Yeah. That's just wonderful. Another example comes to my mind, and maybe you could describe that a little bit. You may not be as familiar with it as Open Table, but I know there's a ministry, I've forgotten the name of it, who's...
Well, this should be fun, then.
Yeah. Hey, we can say whatever we
want.
Yeah,
that's right.
the mission focus of this group is foster care kids who are about to age out of the foster care system.
Yep.
And this ministry supplies what these people need as they can't come out of adolescence into adulthood and take responsibility for themselves.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm
very familiar with that.
Okay. Hey, could you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. And this is another great example of how community is vital, where government can only do so much.
Yeah.
But together, community and government can do many, many great things. For the listeners that don't understand how this works, a child or children are removed from a home for their own safety. Either they've been neglected or abused or abandoned. And so that there's all sorts of processes that takes, you know, a judge is involved, law enforcement's involved. It's a really big deal to be able to do that. And so we hear a lot about CPS in the news, Child Protective Services. Obviously, all those organizations are very involved in that decision to remove children. And so child's removed. An ideal case would be that child then in the or children from that family that have been removed would visit, if appropriate, with the family and work through their issues.
Yeah.
And so there's a process in place. Hopefully the children and the parents can be reunited. So that's a reunification process. Sometimes that takes months. Sometimes that can take years. But unfortunately, sometimes that is not possible.
Right.
Either the parents are in prison or they're completely gone or there's not a rehabilitation kind of a prognosis. And so at that point, the children, again, a judge is involved. The children then may move to a case plan for adoption. All right. They're not going to be reunified with their family. So maybe the judge would say, okay, you're now up for adoption.
Right.
But not everybody gets adopted.
Right.
Right. We would hope that all the children that are in that position would have a permanent forever family, an adoptive family. But it's just, sadly, that's just not the case. And so what happens to those children as they begin to age through the system? Maybe they came into the system when they were 4 years old, and maybe they've been in the system a dozen years now, which is horrible to think of, but it does happen. Or maybe they came into the system when they were 14, right? Mm-hmm. And it took a couple years for them to figure out, okay, now you're up for adoption and they're not getting adopted. But they can look ahead and say, I'm going to turn 18 on a certain date. And guess what? When you turn 18, you're an adult in Arizona, and you can kind of do whatever you want. Right, when you turn 18. At that point, some children decide, I've had enough help, I'm out of here, and decide they don't want anything to do with foster care, adoption, judges, any of that stuff. And so when they turn 18, they bolt. And if they bolt, they may bolt with very few possessions,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. Or maybe they've accumulated some and they would leave with those. So that's called aging out of foster care. That's kind of the phrase that you'll hear a lot. And I think you used that phrase earlier. But there's help in this that most people aren't aware of. When they have a case plan for adoption, but there's no placement on the horizon, kind of thing, so they don't know where they're going to go, and they're starting to get close to 18, maybe they're 16 years old, there's something called a young adult program that is administered through community partners in the state to help that young person move successfully to independent living. All right. And so that can go all the way to the age 21. Right, but it's up when the child turns 18, the child decides whether they want to stay in that, right? And so even though there's help now with rent and education and medical and all sorts of other things, some of these young adults who just turned 18, they opt out, they want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Others stay in that and get some benefit from that as they're working towards independent living.
Right.
Now, when I was 18, I didn't think I was not independent.
Right.
You know. So imagine what it's like for someone who's been in the foster care system, and you know. And I think one of the stats is something like, by the time someone ages out of the system, they've been placed 5.6 times on average.
Yeah. Wow.
And so you kind of have that history, not just your biological family that kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
But then you've had a bunch of placements. Now no one's adopted you. So imagine how you might feel, how you might react to help by the time you get to that point.
Right.
So a lot of these young people say, we don't want anything to do with it. So that's kind of how it's set up.
Right.
So you ask the question, tell me about this ministry. There are ministries to provide young people with what they need to get started in independent living.
Right.
There's a great organization here. It's here in the Phoenix area, but they work around the state, called OCJ Kids.
Yes.
And what they do is they go into group homes and provide mentors to these children that will be aging out.
Right.
All right. So they have coaches, if you will, individual coaches that help them and tell them about, here's what you can get until you're 21. This is the kind of help and the supports, and you need to stay with this. You got to stay in school. You got to, you know. And so that's one of the projects that they have is this mentoring coaching in these homes. Another piece of it is, if the child does decide when they turn 18 that they're done, to get them set up with as much stuff that they'll need.
Right.
And that piece is called the suitcase initiative.
Yes.
Yeah. It's both a physical and a metaphorical suitcase. What can we give these young people that have made the decision they're going independent when they turn 18?
Right.
How can we help them with stuff, if you will?
Chuck, I think there's another organization also that we had them on the show, and it's been years ago since we had them on the show. I think it's Casa de las Panas or something like that.
There are a number of organizations. Casa de los Niños, And you know, there are a lot of foster care agencies and adoption agencies. They're all in this in different ways. Depending on what their organization is about. So OCJ Kids is not the only one working on this, but that's an example of a faith-based organization. They're clearly, I mean, they're very upfront that they're a Christ-centered ministry,
right?
And but as the state and as the rest of the system, we still interface with them. And again, that's a different church-state relationship, right? It's one that we're serving the same young people. We should know each other and make sure that we're doing the best possible, that all the arrows are lining up in the same direction for that young person, that we're not counteracting what each other's doing, but we're all working in concert together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, yeah, so it's the community building, networking, the net that can be woven together.
Yeah.
That's You know, I've been to the summits that you've helped organize, that EDS has been part of, and even the organizing principle there is, what other organizations can we gather together to do the summit? And I go to these summits, I've been to a few, and I go to all the tables and listen to all the speakers, and my head is spinning at the end. And one thought that crosses my mind is, how does Chuck keep all of this straight? And that's a lot of plates to keep spinning. So now I see it, is that you desire to build community in which all of these things can function. And if you see a need, you start gathering for that need, that issue. And I wouldn't be surprised if your base spiritual gift is evangelism. Because you're a gatherer. I can't picture you like going to the laundromat, waiting until somebody puts their clothes in so they're not going to leave, and then getting out the Bible and start.
Right.
But an evangelist is someone who gathers. And that I think these needs are so close to the heart of Jesus that's what motivates you.
Well, a couple things came to mind as you were saying that. I don't know how much time we have left here, but one is that whenever I hear anything, and I don't know if this is a blessing or a curse, but whenever I hear anything, my first thought is, who else needs to know this?
Yeah.
It's not what's in it for me or anything like that. It's like, who else needs to know this information? Someone else is working on this, and they don't know this. I just learned it, and they don't know it. And so it's that connecting piece of, and here's a great example of it. A few years ago, I was in Parker. If you don't know where Parker is, it's on the Colorado River, a small community.
Yep.
You don't go through Parker to get anywhere. You have to want to go to Parker. You have to want to go there is basically it.
Yeah.
And so I was at an event in Parker. There were two women sitting at a table next to each other. Both had lived in Parker 20-some years. Both had been working on issues relating to children for those 20-some years. It's the first time they knew what each other did.
Oh, my.
It's the first time they knew what each other did was that day.
Wow.
And so nothing else happened from that event where there were 200 people there at that event other than that one connection at that one table.
Right.
It was a successful day.
Right.
And because they're serving the same people and they didn't know about each other in their own small community.
Yeah.
And there's so much of that happens. Check you on your own block, wherever it is you live, there are people that care about the things you care about, and you don't know it.
Yeah,
and that's just the world we live in. And so, I don't know exactly where I was going with that, other than demonstrate that when I hear something, I immediately think, who else needs to know that?
That's
so it's not always connecting community to the systems; it's connecting people within the same community.
Right.
Like the classic example is you have an intersection with a church on each corner and all four have food banks.
Right.
It's like, really?
Hello?
Right. That model may work if the churches are in rural areas and they're separated by distance, but in an urban area, that doesn't seem like a real good way to spend your resources and your talents.
No, that's for sure. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, we have my wife and I have a little bit of connection in Parker, and she more than I have. She went to our Episcopal church there in Parker for a little while, a few months, and led worship there. And it's just a small community, right at the Crit Reservation.
Yeah, and, it's a beautiful community too.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, because they're not in. Connected to a large metropolitan area, there's a lot of need that's not being met in communities like that.
Yeah.
And it's, the only way that the need will get met is if the community is aware of it and is awoken to it.
Right.
And I think Parker's a good example. I think there is pretty tight community there.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. That's really something. Yeah. Well, hey Pete, where are we now?
Well, we're right down here to the short rows. There's no doubt about that. I think it's about time we kind of wrapped it up. And if Chuck has information with regard to how to get hold of him. If he wants to give any of that information out, now would be the time for his shameless self-promotion.
Okay, let me. Do I have 60 seconds?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. In closing, I would like to say that I work for Director Clarence Carter at the Department of Economic Security. Clarence's his vision for the Human Services Safety Net is that it becomes an engine for human well-being, and it focuses really on moving the person through the system. More of a person-centric way of providing services versus a program-centric way of providing services. And so you'll hear a lot about Director Carter in the news. He has a blog. He unpacks a lot of those issues, and he's really taken this issue of community and elevated it within state government. And the way he likes to talk about it is, government's an important piece, but it's not the only piece. It takes the broadest sense of community to really solve these problems. And one of the things I've heard him say is, it takes the whole community to make the community whole. And so that's the drumbeat you will be hearing from DES if you listen in the news and pay attention. To get a hold of me, the easiest way to get a hold of me is an email address. It's community@azdes.gov. That's community@azdes.gov. And I reply to all those messages personally, and will provide all my contact information within that. So that I think that's the best way to get a hold of me. If you want I'll just give you the DES website too. If you want to snoop around on that, it's azdes.gov. That's a pretty easy one, azdes.gov, or you can look at arizonaserves.gov, which is part of my work as well. So there you have it.
Very good. Well, thank you, Chuck, for visiting with us. And, John, thanks for bringing Chuck back again. It's always an interesting conversation when we have him here. So with that, we're just going to close it off for the day. We want to thank everybody for listening, and remind everybody that we're going to be back with another Boomer and the Babe show at 11 o'clock Pacific time. We have a national program that we're going to be doing. And in that national program today, we are going to be talking about, let me get my schedule out here. The conversation we're having today is with Colleen Murphy from FootSmart about foot health. Should be interesting. All about the corns and the bunions on your feet. And when you read them, it'll tell you what's going to happen in your future. No, not really, but that's... but nonetheless, have a great day, everybody. Have a good morning for the rest of it, of those of you here in Arizona. And we'll be back, like I said, at 11 o'clock Arizona time with our next show. Thanks again, John. Thank you, Chuck. Take care.
All right, Pete.
You've been listening to Arizona Boomer Radio with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.